Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 146 of the Last Round Podcast. Thanks again for joining us, whether this is your first time or you've been with us since the beginning. We appreciate it, whether you're listening on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Boxing Socials, YouTube channel, wherever you're at, however you're listening. We definitely appreciate the support. This week, he just returned to the States from the UK, covering one of the biggest boxing fights of this year in the UK, actually, between Anthony Joshua, the former, now former heavyweight, unified heavyweight champion of the world, and Alexander Usyk, who is now the unified heavyweight champion of the world. He's an American sportscaster, television host, and play-by-play announcer specializing in combat sports. And I believe his most recent title, he is now the vice president of global acquisitions for ESBC Game, which is coming out with a boxing game in the near future. And he obviously commentated the Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk fight this past weekend for DAZN alongside Roy Jones Jr. and Darren Barker. Todd Grisham joins us here on the Last Round. Thanks again for joining us, Todd.
Man, that was like a 5-minute introduction, bro. You made me sound like I'm important or something.
Well, you've added some titles since the last time you were on, man. So I had to make sure hit all of them.
Yeah, but it's like a boxer. You know, you win the regional titles. No one cares about you. The regular champ. They're all the same thing. But thanks for having me on.
You got it. You got it, man. So obviously, as we mentioned, you were commentating the fight, the event for DAZN over there across the pond. You know, before we kind of dive into the actual fight, we wanted to talk to you about the atmosphere there. Since you've covered and you've been a part of some pretty big events in sports and entertainment, especially with professional wrestling, with the WWE and WrestleManias and stuff like that, is there any similarities between a boxing fight, especially with the crowd that was what was for Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk, and maybe a wrestling crowd, you know, the ambience, the atmosphere?
Well, yeah, the atmosphere, certainly. And that one had a lot of fire and pyrotechnics, and that's, you know, what WWE is all about. And the entrances were elaborate. So in that regard, certainly. And the buzz was off the charts. And, you know, sometimes boxing, when it goes 12 full rounds, you kind of got lulls in the action, and maybe you guys feel differently, but when I was calling it, I felt like every round lasted 10 seconds. It was such a fast fight. And I remember sitting there thinking, try and just absorb what you're part of right now, because it was such an amazing show.
What was the one thing, like when you were there, when did you really know, like really feel the energy from that crowd? Was it at the main event, or was it maybe the Lawrence Okolie fight? When did you really feel it?
I felt it for the main event, but you kind of sense it building, you know, even if the fight before it was kind of whatever, when you got 70,000 people in the building or 67,000, whatever it is, it's just, you just sense something, you know, and they were all there for obviously AJ, and every time they put AJ on the screen, they'd go crazy. And, you know, they started singing the Sweet Caroline, and in between rounds, they were playing, like, you know, the Killers, like the Mr. Brightside or whatever random song they play, and the whole crowd would sing along with it. They were just there post-COVID, probably a lot of them getting out in an arena for the first time, just really wanting to have fun, wanting to be part of something special. And they were, even though it was a losing effort by their man.
Right. So obviously their man, like you mentioned, was Anthony Joshua. He had much of the support there. And it was Alexander Usyk who took his world titles away. Alexander Usyk is now the WBA, IBF, WBO, and IBO world heavyweight champion. What was your take on this fight beforehand, Todd? Did you think that Usyk, obviously he had a chance, at least to us hardcore boxing fans and media and all that, but when you were there live, especially as the rounds were going, what was your opinion?
I thought going into the fight, I wasn't the only person that said it. A lot of people said it. as long as Anthony Joshua doesn't try and outbox Usyk, he should be fine. But in the end, that's kind of what he did. It was a boxing match. It was a high, you know, high impact boxing match. A lot of big power punches were landed, but it was just surprising to me that Usyk gave as good as he got. You know, you thought he not an amateur style because he's a heavyweight, but he'd be scoring points. You know, he wouldn't be really hurting Joshua that much, but he'd be scoring points. But man, he rocked Joshua, especially there at the end of the 12th round. If there was a couple more seconds, and there should have been, mind you, they rung the bell early. I think Usyk knocks him out.
You mentioned the couple more seconds. That was all over boxing Twitter following that. And then there were some people, I saw some that said, oh no, it was right. It was accurate. But then some other people will say, no, there was 8 seconds left. I think it was Damian Lillard, the NBA basketball player who had kind of put a lot of attention on the time. I think he tweeted that he was like, there was still some time left when they rang the bell. Well, did you guys know that?
While you were commentating? At the time, I'm not thinking that, but you're looking at the bottom corner. When you watch it back, you see that the DAZN clock is at like 10 seconds. They faded out, and like 3 seconds later, the bell rings. So according to the DAZN clock, there should have been more time. But in the end, Usyk won. Had he lost, then maybe there'd be more controversy about it. But he got the dub.
Were you able to speak to Roy Jones Jr. Like off camera? You know, when the broadcast was over, like what was his take on it? If you had a personal conversation with him?
Well, he was pretty much right on, man. I spent so much time with Roy because we had to go back and forth to the arena from our hotel during the week for rehearsals and meetings and whatever. And it's like an hour each way. So we were sitting in the car together like 6 hours. So we went over the fight 100 different ways. But he was definitive. I mean, it wasn't like, I think Usyk will win. If he's like, if he boxes him, Usyk's going to win. It's over. He's not going to outbox him. There's no chance. And if you listen to the very end of the fight, I'm saying, do you believe this? Do you believe this? You know, when Joshua's rocked against the ropes and Roy's like, of course I believe it. because that's what he was preaching. He was like, man, Joshua's got to go in there and hurt him early and get him in trouble. And if he doesn't, Usyk could grind him down. And that's exactly what happened.
But how is it for you to be, you know, I'm growing up, I'm sure you just like, cause you watched Roy Jones Jr., you know, boxing, and now you're working alongside him.
Yo, it's incredible. And I've always said this, my favorite fighter ever is Evander Holyfield, but the best fighter I've ever seen is Roy Jones Jr. I mean, if you go back and watch him, the stuff he was doing, I mean, he was like a giant lion playing with a cub, playing with his food. You know, he'd just sit there and would be like, all right, time to knock the guy out. I'll knock him out. He was just incredible. And the things he did were in the ring. I don't know if we'll ever see another one quite like him. So it's an honor to sit next to him. He's got a great boxing mind. You know, He breaks down fights a little differently than everyone else, but he was spot on for this one.
Todd, I'm sure before the fight, you got to do some sit downs with AJ and Usyk, and you probably saw them around the stadium. Did you think he looked too relaxed? Because a lot of people after the fight were kind of saying that AJ was, you know, took a long time coming to the ring. He was, you know, touching gloves with the fans and chatting to his corner team, and he didn't have that, you know, that eye of the tiger, should we say?
Yeah. Well, but if you go back, when has he ever, you know, remember against Andy Ruiz after he lost, he was like, you know, props to him. You know, he's great. He's just a gentleman. He loves living in the moment. He's always happy. He's always has a big smile on his face. I think that's just the way he is. It would be artificial, in my opinion, if all of a sudden Anthony Joshua comes out looking like a menace to society, because that's not who he is. Now, Deontay Wilder can mean mug you. You know what I mean? That's his personality. But Anthony Joshua, I think he is what he is. And all things, forget what happened in the ring, he's one of the great sportsmen in all of boxing.
Todd, what do you think are the differences between AJ's first loss, or actually only loss to Andy Ruiz, and his loss, this recent loss to Usyk?
Well, I think as soon as the Andy Ruiz rematch got made, Josh was still a favorite, a big favorite. Because everyone thought it was a lucky moment for Ruiz, and it turned out maybe it was. But for Usyk, he was outboxed comprehensively. There was nothing fluke about it. I mean, I think they fought the next night, and the next night, and the next night, Usyk would win every time if that was the same strategy. So this is a little, I shouldn't say scary, but maybe that is the right word. It's scary if you're a Joshua fan, and Joshua's longtime goal has been, I want to be the undisputed unified heavyweight champion. That means he's going to have to beat Alexander Usyk, and I'm not sure he can do it.
So what did you think of, you know, Usyk found his range like really, really quickly. And after a couple of rounds, you know, AJ just didn't seem to change his game plan. Do you think that he just didn't listen to his corner team? Do you think his corner team thought, you know, eventually that, you know, AJ would find his jab and start backing him up?
Well, you know, I didn't. It's so loud there that I'm hearing stuff in my ear. I wasn't really able to hear a lot of what the corner was saying. But from what I've read and heard, they were just very cool, calm, and collected in the corner. No urgency. And, you know, fighters always come in there and say, well, we did this and we did that. They never say, I did this. They say it's a team, my trainer, my coaching staff, my cut man. We're all part of a team. So his job as the fighter is to do what his coach and his trainer tell him to do. So if they're like, steady as she goes, then, you know, you can't really fault him that much. I mean, in hindsight, and I said this on another interview I did the other day, you know, you kind of want Teddy Atlas in your corner at some point going, you know, what are you doing? Let's go. Lyman. You're the bigger man. Go knock him out. Don't body it. You're not winning. You're losing. But he didn't hear that. So it depends on where you want to put the blame, but the corner certainly didn't help.
Do you think there was too many cooks in the kitchen, as they say? Because obviously, you know, he's got Rob McCracken and he also has like Angel Fernandez. You know, there's three kind of like main coaches that are in the corner. Do you think that's too many voices for him to listen to?
Well, normally I would say yes, but none of them were any of them saying anything different. It'd be one thing if one of them was saying, go kill him. And someone else was like, no, let's outbox him. But they were all on the same page. So sometimes it's good to have someone to ruffle the feathers a little bit. You know, I think it would have been good for one of the guys to huddle him up. Well, you know, before the round ends and say, look, man, we got to do something different. We're losing. You guys are too passive. You know, light a fire under him. Do something. Now, that said, I think in the 12th round, when people are like, he should have gone for the KO, I think Joshua, in his back of his mind, considering how exhausted he was after the fight, he was like, man, I just want to survive. I'm in trouble. I don't know that I knocked this guy out. And we saw that it was Usyk who almost got the KO.
Like in soccer, like in any other sport, you know, as soon as the team starts to lose, they start looking for a new coach. Do you think AJ will look around maybe and, you know, test the waters with somebody else?
Well, he always talks about loyalty and family and you know, he'll tell you he didn't get to where he was without his team. So you're asking him to flush them down the toilet. I don't know that he's going to do it, but maybe, you know, if the trainer loves him and says, hey, I've taken you where we've taken you and we need some help. We need a different voice in here. You know, maybe that happens. I don't know, but something's got to change. At least if he wants to beat Usyk, that style might be Pulev again. It might be Otto Wallen if he fights him, but he's not going to beat Usyk.
One thing I was thinking was a lot of people, the general consensus was, you know, he should have backed him up. He should have leaned on him. He should have done like, you know, three or four punch combinations. But we've never seen that AJ. He's never done that. He's always been kind of like a middle range puncher.
Yeah.
So when people were saying that's what he should have done, that's really kind of like off script for every other fight he's ever done.
Well, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. You got to adapt and change, you know, especially he's always taking a little criticism for not using that jab more. It's easy for us to Monday morning quarterback this thing. If he'd gone in there and pushed the pace and gotten caught, we'd all be like, he didn't learn anything from the first Ruiz fight. What an idiot. What's he thinking? He should have stayed on the outside and boxed him. So it's easy to say that now. And it's not easy for people to say, if they have a rematch, you should just go and try and kill him right away. Because if he doesn't kill him in the first three rounds, then what happens? Then he's back to plan A, which got him defeated this time. So it's always going to be a lot of criticism, no matter what happens when you lose a major fight like this and the way he lost it. But obviously, if he would have stuck to the jab, kept him at range a little bit more, been able to land his power punches where Usyk, you know, you make a guy pay. That's if you're a taller guy, hey, this guy wants to come inside, he's going to pay coming in, he's going to pay going out. And Joshua wasn't able to do that. I don't think he was even trying to do that.
You tell me if you agree with this, Todd, but what I noticed when I was watching the fight, comparing it to the second Ruiz fight that AJ had, I felt like AJ was a little bit more timid and hesitant because of Ruiz's power, maybe because he got stopped in the first fight, as compared to in this Usyk fight. I think he knew that Usyk could, you know, catch him with some shots, but I feel like he was a little bit more hesitant with Ruiz because of his power than he was with Usyk. Do you agree or disagree with that?
There was a moment, I think it was the third round, might have been the second, where Usyk really clipped him good. And you're like, whoa, he might be hurt. And I think that kind of set the tone where Josh was like, wait a minute now. I've been reading how this guy's not, doesn't have a lot of pop, but he's got a lot of pop. This was the heaviest Usyk's ever weighed. You know what I mean? When you got a cruiserweight who's now like, look, I can eat pretty much what I want. I can go heavy on the weights and go heavy on the heavy back. I'm building muscle now. I don't need to cut. I mean, Usyk's become a true, real heavyweight. And he was screaming that from the highest mountain coming into this fight. He would get offended when you would say, you know, you're kind of a blown up cruiserweight. No, I'm a real heavyweight and I'm going to show you. And he did.
And Roy, you know, your partner on the commentating table, Roy Jones Jr., moved up to heavyweight as well from cruiserweight. So, I mean, who better at that point, at least to commentate and opine on a situation like that, right?
Right. Yeah. He was a light heavyweight. He jumped cruiserweight. He skipped it just to win heavyweights out. But then he cut all the way back down to light heavy. And then he just got blitzed by, what was it? Glenn Johnson or Tarver. It was, that was Tarver, terrible. Yeah. But, yeah, he certainly knows, but I mean, his body, Jones didn't really look like a true heavyweight. I don't know what he weighed for that fight, but Usyk, if you didn't know anything, you'd be like, he looks like a heavyweight, you know, and he's taller than Ruiz. He's got better movement than Ruiz. The only thing Ruiz had was faster hands. And I think Usyk's power is really underrated.
So in terms of a rematch, obviously Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing and AJ, they've already pretty much indicated, hey, you know, we're going to exercise the rematch clause. You know, much of the opinion, and then like you said, Roy Jones Jr., and you kind of shared the same opinion that if he tries to box Usyk, it's not going to work. You know, Usyk, is his boxing ability and his technique is more superior to AJ's. So, I mean, how does he win the second fight and get his belts back?
I don't think if I'm him, I don't take it next. I go back to the drawing board. I you don't want to fight a jobber, so to speak, but why not fight, you know, an Otto Wallen next, and then a Derek Chisora next, and then a Dillian White next, and build your confidence and, you know, build your style a little better and work on things. So then when you fight Usyk, you've got some momentum, because right now, I mean, Joshua probably feels like he's the bottom of the deep end of the swimming pool. He's got to swim all the way up, and, you know, he's got to somehow beat this tiger, this guy that just destroyed him, you know. But fair play to him if he can come back and do it. You know, that's what Wilder's doing. And when Wilder, I know you want to talk about Wilder in a minute, but Wilder, when he lost that fight to Fury, I was thinking, do not rematch. Same thing right now. Like, do not rematch him. There's nothing's going to change. Could be even worse. Horrible, horrible. But it's been so long since that fight's happened, and so much has changed in both the fighters' camps and their attitudes and their mentalities. I think Wilder's got a really good shot to win this fight. Now, if Joshua and Usyk doesn't happen again for another year and a half, then yeah, maybe he does. But to come back in 3 or 4 months and fight him again, I don't see how anything changes.
Todd, what's your opinion on, you know, rematches, you know, being written in, you know, having the clause, especially when a fight like this was, you know, not really close? Do you think they should be allowed, or do you think it should be more like the UFC where, like you just touched on, they go away and they kind of have to earn the rematch?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's boxing. I mean, UFC has control over all their fighters. Boxing has no control. So some of these fighters, you know, you gotta take the fight no matter what they say to you. You know, here's the purse. Here's the rematch clause. Here's this. And if you don't sign it, we'll get the next guy to do it. So, but Usyk has shown he'll fight anybody anywhere. I mean, he's the ultimate road warrior. And I did see where he said, if we have the rematch, if Joshua takes the rematch, I'd love to have it in Kiev, Ukraine, in the big Olympic stadium there. But that may not be financially feasible. I'm not sure, but that would certainly be an awesome scene.
Yeah, it definitely would. And I'm sure a lot of his fans there would definitely show up for
him.
You know, Usyk, you know, in this whole mythical, you know, sometimes people hate that we talk about this, but the mythical pound for pound here, you know, a lot of people want to say, like, there was, you know, little debate on social media about this. Oh, Usyk should be above Canelo, and can he, or he should at least be number two, you know, mythical. What's your measurement of his win, and where does he land?
I put him in the top three, probably. I think it would be Canelo, and then Tyson Fury, him, and somewhat of that order, maybe, you know, and then maybe Crawford. I'm just spewing stuff out right now, but how do you not put him up there? Undisputed unified cruiserweight champion. He went through some pretty big, nasty guys to get there. Who's up to heavyweight. He's 3-0, including a win over Anthony Joshua in front of 70,000 people in his hometown, a convincing win over the heavyweight champion. So, I mean, wherever you want to put him, you got to have him in your top five for sure. But right. I think if he fights Fury, I think Fury probably wins because Fury's much better distance and range and movement than Anthony Joshua is, and that will probably give Usyk some problems. But other than that, I don't know anyone else that's going to be able to beat him unless they land a big heavy punch. You know, Chisora couldn't get him out of there. That's a pretty damn heavy hitter.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe Wilder. That would be a fun – if Wilder can somehow beat Fury – him versus Usyk would be a lot of fun because Wilder, you know what he's going to do. He's not going to try and box and do it. He's going to be like, come on, let's go. I'm going to try and hit you as hard as I possibly can.
So transitioning to the trilogy match between Fury and Wilder on October 9th, Todd. Obviously, we know that Deontay Wilder's weapon is that right hand, that straight missile that he's been utilizing his whole professional career, and it's been working for him. He connects on you, and you just go down like a sack of potatoes. Do you think it's wise for him to just rely on that again against Fury after this second fight that where he lost?
Well, how good can he be if he does? Let's say he doesn't have the big right hand, then how does he win a fight? You know, what does he need to do? That's his thing. That's it. It's his right hand. Now he can learn how to deliver it a little better, a little more often, and set it up maybe better. But that's you dance with the girl that you brung to the dance. You know what I mean? That's who he's got. So I think more for him, instead of relying on he's relying on the right hand because he has to rely on the right hand. He's just got to change his strategy. Instead of fighting on his back foot and let Tyson Fury, he's got to bite down on his mouthpiece and put a line in the sand in the middle of the ring and said, I'm not moving. Mm-hmm. That's what in my opinion, he's got to do that. And he says he's going to.
Obviously, you know, Wilder's now got, you know, Malik Scott in his corner. Looks like he's been trying to show him some new things, but that old time phrase, if you can't teach old dogs new tricks. What do you think of that, Todd? Yeah. Do you think he's just going to be too old? And
you listen to some of Wilder's old interviews and he never talked about changing his style or working harder. He was just like, I'm the baddest man. I do what I want. And now you listen to him, not that he's been humbled, but he is so laser focused right now. He's not talking about anything else but about winning this fight. He's dedicated. You've seen the training videos. He's in the ocean throwing punches. He's in the gym. And you look at Fury and he's just dropping F-bombs and he's not talking. He looks a little fat and he's got COVID one day and the next day he posts a picture of himself car shopping. And, you know, I don't see that hunger out of Fury. I think he feels, it's going to be an easy night's work just like it was last time. And I don't think you can go into any heavyweight fight thinking that, but maybe he's right and I'm wrong. In my opinion, though, Wilder is on a seek and destroy mission, and God bless him if he can do it.
Do you think it's a negative that the fact that he didn't accept the defeat, or do you think that just, you know, professional fighters need to make an excuse to convince themselves that they just weren't beaten by the better man?
Well, hey, I just said Anthony Joshua was a great sportsman. He didn't make an excuse. So he's better than me. He's a better man. I think sometimes when someone's never lost before, they've never faced defeat, they don't know how to handle it. Not as much as Wilder refused to handle it, but they just don't know. It surely can't be because he's just better than me. That doesn't make sense to his brain. It's got to be something else because I'm better than any man on the planet. He's been telling himself that for 10 years and everyone else has been telling him that for 10 years. You know what I mean? Kind of Donald Trump. You didn't lose this. You didn't lose this election. There's no way you lost. You're right. I didn't lose this election. I'm the greatest. You're the greatest. That's all he hears. So when you hear that all the time, you can't sometimes accept the negativity that surrounds it. So I think that was Wilder's way of handling it. That's why there was so many different excuses. If he made one excuse, then I'd be like, well, he believes it. But there was so many, and it kind of got comical. But I'm hoping he's got that behind him. He doesn't really talk about it much anymore, which is a good thing. He needs to look forward and completely change everything about that last fight.
Do you think that's a negative, though, the fact that he'd make the excuses because then he doesn't look at himself and what he needs to improve on?
Yes, of course. But from what I've seen, again, I'm just watching the videos and hearing the interviews. I'm hearing how he's talking right now going into the fight. That's why after that fight, I was like, how could you possibly do a rematch with this guy? He's going to get destroyed. But he's got a new mentality, a new outlook, a new trainer, like you said. And for the most part, he sounds like the same person, and Tyson Fury sounds like the person who's lost his mind. about this fight. You know, you ask him anything about Wilder and he just goes on a profanity-laced tirade. Doesn't talk about the fight or the strategy. He just says, F you, I'm going to F this, F that, no problem.
So Todd, boxing fans have always, you know, they always look forward to the mega fights, the big fights. At one point it was Wilder Joshua, when Wilder had the title and Joshua had the titles at the moment. And then Wilder got beat and then Joshua got beat by Ruiz and, you know, vice versa. And then Joshua got the belts back and now he gets beat by Usyk. So like people, you know, fans, everybody, every fan has their differentiating opinion because they feel that this hurts the mega fights. But do you think that, you know, all these different pieces of the heavyweight division, for example, an Usyk coming in and beating Joshua or Ruiz coming in initially and beating Joshua, do you think that adds to the drama of the heavyweight division, or do you want to see, like, you know, the more organized, you know, winners, like, okay, Joshua's the favorite, he should win so we can set up a match with Fury later on down the line?
I mean, boxing's so messed up, man. When it comes together perfect, there's nothing better, but it rarely comes together perfect. I mean, the fact that Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua somehow have not fought yet and ruined that, the biggest fight any of us have ever been a part of, arguably, is a shame, a stain on the sport, but it happens all the time. Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather didn't fight until 5 years after it should have happened. That's just the way it goes. Very rarely do you get two monsters in their prime, a mega, mega fight. You know, maybe they can build it back up, the Fury versus Joshua fight. I don't know. But, you know, it happens in UFC as well. I mean, look, John Jones and Ngannou, that's the biggest fight they could possibly make right now. It ain't going to happen anytime soon. You know, John Jones is sitting in a Las Vegas jail cell, and Ngannou's furious that they have an interim heavyweight champion. So it happens in all fight sports, but more than often, or more than any other sport, it happens in boxing, and it's a real shame.
So how would you rank the heavyweights right now from your personal opinion as a boxing fan?
Maybe I'll just give you the top four, cause then I'll be forgetting somebody.
Yeah. I mean, the top,
you gotta go Fury. I would go Fury, Usyk, Joshua, and Wilder. That's how I'd look at it. Top four. Unless I'm forgetting someone, I'm probably not. I mean, after that, you get into the Dillian Whites and the Otto Wallens and the Derek Chisora's of the world. None of them have, you know, really stamped their names on thing. I'm trying to think of Joe Joyce is probably flirting at the top. I like Michael Hunter, man. That guy's nasty. Hrgović, the Croatian. I mean, a lot of these young, it's almost like I wish we could go back to the K1. I don't know if you guys watched the K1 kickboxing MMA back in the day.
Or kickboxing.
Kickboxing. Yeah. They have an 8-man one night tournament. Can you imagine if we got the top 8 heavyweight, like 3-round fights? You know, 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3, it'd be incredible. And then we'd really find out. But unfortunately in boxing, it takes years to filter out. You know, Hrgović may take 2 or 3 years before he gets a crack at a heavyweight champion. But the good thing about Usyk, as I've said before, he's fought anybody and he fights them in their hometowns. So if he keeps this going and he keeps that hunger going, let's assume he fights Joshua next and wins. He's not the kind of guy that's going to say, well, I'm not going to fight Deontay Wilder right now because I'm gonna take an easy fight against. He's not gonna do that. It's just not the way he's raised. And he said many times, I don't fight for money, I don't fight for titles, I fight for glory. So if people are like, hey, Usyk, we think this is the guy you can't beat or the best opponent for you, I think he will fight that guy as long as it makes financial sense.
Right. Yeah, it always goes back to the finances in boxing, doesn't it, Todd? So you know, one last take on the Wilder Fury on October 9th. You think it ends the same way, Fury?
I don't remember. I said this a couple of weeks ago. I would have bet a large portion of my life savings that Tyson Fury would have beaten Deontay Wilder a month or two after the fight. But right now, for some reason, I got a feeling I think Wilder knocks him out.
Man, you know what? I've been sharing that same opinion the last couple of weeks as well. I think it was reasonable to think that Fury was just going to take it again. Like, oh, it's going to be the repeat of the second fight. But I don't know.
I may look stupid, but if Wilder's, the only way Wilder can win, I think, is to stand there and turn it into a brawl. And the way Fury's talking, like, I'm gonna go in there and crush this guy. He's nothing. He's just, you've heard it. If Fury does that and Wilder does what he says he's going to do, then it's a 50-50 fight.
Mm-hmm. Do we see a fourth match?
Why not
Wilder Woods?
I don't know how the the contract reads right now. But I think if Wilder wins, throw him right in there against Usyk. He wants to be undisputed as well. Trust me, the longer this goes, eventually someone's going to strip him of a title because he didn't fight their mandatory first, or blah, blah, blah. And then it's going to be gone for 4 or 5 years. That's just the way it happens. So, you know, get while they're getting good. But Wilder, I don't know. I'm not sure how motivated Wilder is to be undisputed and unified. I'm sure he wants it, but he's not like Joshua was about it. He's not obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also on the card, another bout that you call another WBO cruiserweight world title fight. Lawrence Okoli gets a third round KO over, is it Dylan?
He's from Montenegro. He got sent back there pretty quickly.
What was your take on the fight and Okoli's win, obviously?
I mean, it was a complete and utter misfit. He was a 40-1 favorite. Mm-hmm. It's just embarrassing. What was it, WBO title? It's just so embarrassing. If you're like, who's the main person from WBO? Sit in a room and look me straight in the eyes, and you tell me this guy's about to fight is the best cruiserweight in the world other than Okoli, according to you. Is that true? Are you willing to put your reputation on that? Or would you rather pick one of these other 10 guys over here? You know, who's going to give him the best fight? Your guy's not. But because you want money, because you're greedy, because you don't want to have the same mandatory as the other belt, you got to fight this guy. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing that happened with Canelo and Yeldrin. No, Yeldrin? Turkish guy.
Yeldrin,
it's like when you're at the fair, because I was at the fair last night, and they go, world's smallest man, pay $1 to walk in this trailer and check him out. You walk in there, and they got like a 5-year-old kid in there pretending to smoke a cigarette. You're like, oh, I got hoodwinked. And that's what boxing's all about. You got hoodwinked. So it was an easy night's work for Okoli. He didn't get better. We didn't learn anything about him. It was a waste of time.
And not from this one performance, obviously, because like you said, it was kind of one-sided. But from what you've seen from Okoli so far, how do you think he'll fare when he steps up to heavyweight?
I think, well, he's got, I asked Roy Jones about it. He's got the frame for sure. He's got such a long reach, and he was using that to measure his opponent all night. And you get a guy like that, it's kind of like how Klitschko was. You throw a big left hook or whatever, and he's got his right arm out there, his jab, or his left arm out there, his jab. He's blocking all your punches just with the jab. So Okoli is certainly has the frame for it, and he's got the mentality. That's what he wants to do. I don't see why he can't. He reminds me a little bit of already mentioned his name, a little bit of a boxing version of John Jones. You know, you look at Jones and you're like, man, this guy's really good, and he could go up and go up another couple divisions and do some damage. So I think Okoli can certainly do that if he continues to improve.
He's got long levers, long frame, just like John Jones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she's shredded just like Jones used to be. Not so much anymore.
I was going to say, he's not shredded anymore, man.
No, he's not.
Okoli, I believe he has that story, where he used to work at McDonald's. And I think his last fight or one of his previous fights after his win, the McDonald's, I don't know if it was a Twitter account or one of those, gave him like a shout out. They acknowledged the win pretty much. Do you think that's ever going to happen, that he gets that sponsorship?
Why not? I mean, his nickname's The Sauce. And Big Mac's got this special sauce, right? But he weighed, I think, 240 pounds when he was 17. I mean, imagine. And it was fat. He wasn't like a big football player. He was fat. But hey, it shows you what boxing can do to you, or do for you. If you put your mind to it, get stuck in, you're disciplined, you work hard and train hard, you could turn out to be Lawrence Okoli, or at least look like him.
Did you have AJ winning the Olympics 2012 was what turned him?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he said that was one of the motivating factors for sure. Yeah. And he dream come true for him to fight as his co-main event and Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, definitely. Also on the card, Callum Smith returns since his fight, I believe, to Canelo Alvarez, his loss to Canelo Alvarez, and gets a second round TKO over Lennon Castillo. What'd you think about Callum Smith's performance, Todd?
That was one of the most brutal knockouts I've ever seen, regardless of the sport. I mean, his body I'm not trying to be funny here, but I worked at WWE for 8 years, and wrestlers would do that. If they got slammed hard, they'd fake like they were, they'd act like they were, being electrocuted, and we go, oh my God, what happened? It's a big joke. But this is happening to a real human being, and it was scary. And it was, thank God he's okay now. Castillo, believes, released from the hospital. They did a brain scan. Everything's okay. But, man, that was violent, vicious, and scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, luckily, he's okay. And then we heard some subsequent news that he was already released from the hospital. So, you know, that's great news. In regards to Callum Smith, Todd, you know, obviously he looked good. He got the job done early night for him. What does that tell you about somebody like Canelo Alvarez, who, you know, had, I don't want to say an easy time. I don't want to, you know, negatively address Callum Smith, but, you know, how the time that
he won almost every round. I mean, facts are facts, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's true.
If you ask Callum Smith, he'll say, man, I was completely drained. Cut into 168 was destroying my body. He keeps saying, I don't want to take any Canelo, but I wasn't my best. And you'll see at 175, I'll show you guys in this fight that I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And boy, did he show us, because Castillo may not have been the best opponent, but he'd never been stopped. And he's been in there with some pretty big names. So the fact that Callum destroyed him instantly does speak volumes about his power and maybe how he's going to carry himself as a light heavyweight.
So you think Callum Smith is really going to fill out at 175 pounds and really make a mark with these other big light heavyweights?
It's hard to argue about what we just saw. You know, what I saw is what I saw. Now, I don't know how he's going to fare against, you know, the other big names in the division, but he's off to a pretty darn good start. You know, I mean, Dimitri Bivol will be in there. Bivol went 12 rounds with this guy, mm-hmm. Castillo. They went 12 rounds. And, you know, so you've got to believe if Callum Smith short-circuited a guy's entire nervous system with a right hand, he might be able to do the same thing if he clips Bivol.
Yeah, that's true. And poor Bivol, man. He's like, he's been trying to get these names in there with him. And as a world champion, he just been having a difficult time. So, you know, maybe we can see a Callum Smith and Bivol fight or something. So,
yeah. Well, I was hoping to Canelo Bivol fight at some point.
But I don't want to say it's not realistic, but do you think, I don't want to say Canelo doesn't have, you know, the balls to do that, but do you really think we would see that?
Yeah, I think so. Of the light heavyweights, I think Bivol would be the guy he'd go after because he's not really a big power guy. Who's the guy? Beter Biev? Is that who I'm thinking of? Mm-hmm. Now, he's a different story. But, you know, when Canelo jumped up to super middleweight, he handpicked Rocky Fielding and destroyed it. Mm-hmm. Why not do the same thing at light heavyweight? I think Canelo will be just fine in that division. I mean, no one's coming close. No one's coming close right now. I mean, it's parity. You know, Billy Joe had some good moments, but the result was never in doubt. I mean, he's dominating everybody. So at some point, knowing Canelo like I do, or at least, you know, whatever, he's the kind of guy that's like, hey, I want a challenge. I want someone to step up. And kudos to Caleb Plant. He's gotten under his skin. So that's something. You know, it's exciting. You never see Canelo rattled. You never see him intense, mainly because I think he didn't speak English at his press conferences. So if a guy said, I'm going to kill you, Canelo, they have to wait for the translation. Canelo would say it's spent. You know what I mean? It loses its luster. But now he's like, you know, you heard him like dropping F-bombs in his post-fight press conferences and yelling at Caleb Plant in English. So I think we Canelo's starting to become more involved in all aspects of boxing. More things excite him. He wants to, you know, enjoy the moment more instead of being more reserved and laid back. And I'm just here to box and be a boxer. Now he's got the boxing is life attitude. Mm-hmm.
No, that's true. Yeah. I completely agree with that. He's definitely showing more personality since he split with Golden Boy and Oscar De La Hoya. I think he's, you know, showing some type of personality there. You know, well, since you touched on the Caleb Plant and, you know, and Canelo situation, especially after their press conference, you touched on Billy Joe Saunders. Do you think, I mean, Plant is obviously he's a world champion. He's obviously a great fighter. He's professional and everything. But I mean, do you think, because we've talked about this already multiple times during the last several weeks, and we believe that Billy Joe Saunders is better than Caleb Plant is. And we think Canelo is going to have an easier time with Caleb Plant than he did with Billy Joe. What do you think?
Well, I wouldn't say it was the joke, but the word was Canelo decided to take the toughest challenge first and work his way down. So he thought Callum Smith was the toughest. Then he got Billy Joe Saunders, and he thinks Caleb Plant is going to be the easiest. So that was the prevailing thought that I've heard a couple people mention around Canelo's plant, around Canelo's team, that they're like, he's going right after Callum Smith because he thinks he's the toughest. And then it was, Billy Joe Saunders, and now Caleb's left. So if that's the way Canelo feels and the way he's talking, he's like, now he's saying my mom wants me to kill this guy. I'm going to not only beat him, but my mom told me I have to. So if you want to bet against Canelo and his mother, more power to you.
Do you think somebody like Canelo Alvarez at the moment, do you think he's just on such a high right now in terms of confidence and his boxing ability in himself that he just can't be beaten? I mean, everybody can be beaten on any given night, but if you had to pick somebody at the moment in the sport of boxing who just has the it factor right now to go in there and like, oh, he's probably going to take it easily. You think it's Canelo Alvarez?
Yeah, I think it is, which there's nothing better than a boxer who has absolute confidence in his abilities and isn't worried about anything else in the world. And there's also, you could flip it and say there's nothing worse than that, because you've got a fighter who believes he's untouchable, right? You got a fighter that believes he's the greatest of all time and he's the best pound for pound in the world. At some point, confidence can turn to cockiness, and that's when it becomes a problem, because maybe you don't prepare quite as hard. Maybe that's what I think maybe is happening to Tyson Fury. Maybe you think you're so good, you're going to beat Wilder so easily. Maybe you cut a few corners in camp, and maybe you cut a few corners around your diet. And that's when things, turn from good to bad.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, we mentioned Roy Jones. I don't remember anything surrounding that camp. But after he won the heavyweight title, mm-hmm. you were like, man, this guy, he can do anything. And next thing you know, boom.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, he won in there. I think it was a John Ruiz. That he won it from
and
he was definitely on a high after that. And boxing has its up and downs, obviously. One fight that we did want to touch on the AJ Usyk card, Todd, which got a lot of controversial pushback, as if you want to describe it that way. It's Campbell Hatton and Sonny Martinez. What was your take?
Disgrace. Complete disgrace.
When you heard the scorecards there, sitting next to Roy, what was his physical reaction?
Well, Roy wasn't there yet. It was me and Darren Barker. It never even crossed the, if you listen to the commentary, I don't remember exactly what we were saying, but it was like, well, Campbell's lost his first fight. What does he need to do differently next time? And the whole year in the fight, Darren was criticized. Oh, man, he's getting lit up. It never crossed my mind. I didn't even think he won a round. He might've won one round. It was a 6-round fight. I thought it was 5-1. Not that I was scoring, but I mean, I couldn't even fathom that he would lose. And then when he started reading he said, well, it's 57-56. I'm like, whoa, that's a real close. It shouldn't be this close. And then he lost. It was a joke. It really was a joke. But the referee over there in England, sometimes the referee just is the judge. And that's what happened in that fight. So there weren't three judges. So I guess you give the referee a little bit of a pass because apparently he does have a good reputation there. Maybe he got distracted. Maybe he wasn't seeing it the way it was, but it was a disgrace.
Mike, what'd you think about Campbell Hatton's win in quotation marks?
Todd really summed it up. It's a disgrace, wasn't it? It's just a black eye for boxing. He was the home fighter. Obviously he's got the Hatton name. So I think sometimes those sorts of things, sway the referee, sway the judges. But that wasn't even close. I mean, the referee could have given it to the away fighter and nobody would have said a word. It was probably worse, the fact that he did it that way.
It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. Yeah. But, I said this yesterday to somebody. If you switch the names on the guy, and Sonny Martinez, is that his name, Martinez?
Yeah. Right.
If he was Campbell Hatton and they did the vice versa switch, he would have won 6-0. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But the fact that his name wasn't Campbell Hatton, he lost.
Right.
Because he lit him up. The crowd would have been the crowd never even cheered for it. There was nothing to cheer about ever. The only time they cheer is after he'd been rocked a couple times and they're like, oh, come on, you can hang in there. That was it. It was mm-hmm. it was one-sided. The other guy was dancing, sticking his tongue out, leaning against the ropes, playing rope-a-dope, slap and tickle. He was having the time of his life. We were saying that. Like, look, he's soaking in the moment. He's a 2-4 fighter, but he's on this big stage fighting the son of a legend and he's beating him comprehensively and he's having the time of his life. And then he lost.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But with the last name Hatton in the UK, that holds a lot of stock with people over there. So we'll see how that goes. Another fight that's actually this in November, Todd, is Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter. Finally, Terrence Crawford gets a good name on his resume, at least to fight as of right now. Who wins that fight?
I don't know. Crawford's a favorite, but he's never fought anybody like Sean Porter. Mm-hmm. So, Crawford thinks it's going to be, I wouldn't say an easy night, but he's like, I will make a statement. It will be definitive. But man, Sean Porter's a beast. He's a, I will not stop until you kill me type of fighter. And I don't know if Terrence Crawford can kill him.
Right. That's true. Yeah. It's definitely going to be a difficult decision. What about Virgil Ortiz? You know, Virgil Ortiz is the number one ranked for mandatory for the WBO, which is the title that Terrence Crawford holds. Do you think if Ortiz fought Crawford, let's just say next month, how does he win? Do you think he has a chance?
You don't know if a guy can swim in the deep end until you push him in the water. He hasn't fought anyone at that level. You know, I don't know. You'd like to think he could make it competitive, but you know, you ask Crawford, after his last fight, Crawford tweeted something like, you honestly think this guy can even compete with me? It's a joke. Come on, stop it. Like, it's funny to him. He's not like, hey, I'd love to get the challenge, give the kid a shot. He thinks it's funny. So, I don't know what would happen, but I think Ortiz is a few fights away from biting off that big piece of meat. So, but hey guys, I appreciate you having me on the show, man.
No problem. Before we let you go, any news on the Esports Boxing Club game? Anything you can talk about before we let you go here?
Oh boy. Things are churning, man. It's gone from like not a regional game, but a smaller game that was going to be kind of cool. And now it's turning into we're trying to create the greatest fight game that's ever been made. So it's getting bigger and bigger every day. And we're signing more and more fighters, and it's going to be awesome when it gets released. And we don't have a release date yet, but just know that the man behind the curtain right now, we're doing all we can, and we're creating a monster.
All right. That's good news. You guys have a high bar, man. A lot of hype behind it.
Listen, man, we've got Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk in the game, signed, sealed, delivered, ready to go. So,
Canelo too, right?
Who?
I think Canelo too, right?
Canelo's in the game. Yeah. We got over 200 fighters. You know, you could fight Usyk with Muhammad Ali, with Jack Johnson, with Rocky Marciano, Sugar Ray Leonard, Joe Lewis. Yeah, Sugar Ray Robinson. Bro, the list goes on and on. It's almost too good to be true. But one day it will be true. We just don't know when that day is.
Well, hopefully soon. Well, once again, Todd, we appreciate your time. We know you got a busy household over there with your daughter, so we'll let you get to them. And then, obviously we'll talk to you again in the future here on The Last Round.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Todd Grisham. He's always a good one. He talks well. He gives very thorough answers. You know, he's one of those sports commentators who he doesn't sit on the fence. Like, he'll give you his opinion. And, obviously we can appreciate that. Right, Mike?
Yeah, I'm thinking more and more, it seems that less people do. I think we've noticed, having people on the podcast, Dougie, Kevin Ioli, Ben Baby, like, more and more, I think it's just becoming like the general consensus now that you can have your own, opinion without people can kick it off and saying, certain things and, having to, just kind of drink the Kool-Aid for whoever they work for.
Yeah. It's good. It adds to the, the ambiance of the sport of boxing. So, but I'm looking forward to that video game. I'm glad I told them. I was like, hey man, you got a high bar. There's a lot of hype behind that game because there really hasn't been, I don't think there's been any that I know of, any legitimate boxing game since Fight Night, which was years ago. There's still people who play Fight Night religiously, and online or whatever they do. I don't even know what it is anymore. But
remember the start of COVID where they did the Fight Night?
Exactly. So it's still happening. So, hopefully it pans out because there's a lot of hype behind it, especially with all these big fighters that they're signing. It'd be great to have an updated and modern boxing game. But as we sign off here for this week's episode of The Last Round, Mike, go ahead and let our followers and listeners know again where they can find us and follow us?
We're at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the big Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder 3 match.
Yeah, looking forward to that one, definitely. I think, like Todd said, and I agree, I think it's not Fury is a reasonable favorite, but I don't know. There's something in my gut that says that Wilder might pull it off, but we'll see. That's what makes fights exciting and intriguing. So for once again, for my co-host, Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round 12.